From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, we're joined by Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker for the next in our monthly series of conversations. We'll touch on everything from the governor's State of the State address to the Utah legislative session.
As it relates to addressing our air pollution problem here, the state has served in some respects as an impediment to us. And transit is a good example in that we cannot fund transit and expand our transit service unless the legislature gives us the authority at the local government, and in this case, actually the voters the authority, to vote on increasing transit funding.
That conversation, your summary of the day's top local headlines, and political cornflakes with Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr, just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later in the show, we'll feature the next in our monthly series of conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. But right now we have these headlines. The conservative Sutherland Institute says it's pulling one of its three ads opposing a statewide non-discrimination law after learning it was inaccurate. The 30-second commercial references but doesn't name Brigham Young University, saying the law might pressure owners of gender-specific student housing to rent to students of the opposite gender in violation of that institution's honor code. But Republican Senator Steve Urquhart's bill prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity specifically exempts college dormitories, religious organizations, or businesses owned by religious organizations. Sutherland Institute President Paul Marrow admitted the mistake in a blog post dated Thursday, saying he felt awful about it. Marrow says the think tank has pulled the ad from YouTube and a website opposing the law and is working to remove it from TV. Utah State Senate leaders on Friday said no big decisions have been made on Medicaid expansion in the state, though no potential options have been ruled out either. Senate Majority Leader Ralph Okerlund says Republicans have barely scratched the surface on that topic in Senate caucus meetings and that no position has been taken.
At this point, I believe all of the options are still out there on the table for our caucus. We're still willing to look at everything, and I suspect that our caucus members, you would find that we have got a lot of different opinions on where we should go at this point, whether we look at one of the options or full expansion or where we might go with that.
That attitude contrasts with Republican House Speaker Rebecca Lockhart, who has stated that Utah should reject all federal money made available for Medicaid expansion. In a press conference on Thursday, Speaker Lockhart said members of the House of Representatives were looking for a solution that is completely state-funded without taking any money from the federal government, even federal revenue provided by Utah taxpayers. She's optimistic that the House will find a, quote, Utah solution.
We have members of our body in the House that are very good at this issue, who have very expertise on this issue, on health care and on Medicaid and the implications of Medicaid and federal money and those kinds of things. We have them working on looking at solutions right now, a state-based solution.
Governor Gary Herbert ultimately has the final say on how the state will proceed with Medicaid expansion, but he has opted to allow the state legislature to come up with a plan during this session. Why did Utah's Senator Mike Lee deliver a response to President Obama's State of the Union address when the Republicans already had one? I posed that and other questions to Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent with Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics.
Well, this was in the mix of several Republican responses, actually, to the State of the Union address. Mike Lee was asked by the Tea Party Express to give a response. The Republicans, of course, had Kathy McMorris Rogers, as well as a response by a Latina congresswoman in Spanish. And in addition, Senator Rand Paul had one as well. But Mike Lee, when I talked to him about this, felt like there are various voices out there on the conservative side, and that we shouldn't just have one response, that people disagree. And it's okay to have more than, you know, one person saying what, you know, their party is about. And for Mike Lee, it was about what the Tea Party movement should be, which is, you know, not being the party of no all the time and trying to say, okay, we've had protest rallies, but let's move to, you know, actually suggesting reforms that we can actually push through instead of just saying we don't like something.
So did he suggest any specific reforms?
Senator Lee's actually rolled out a few of himself. You know, obviously the Tea Party is not top down, so there's a lot of different ideas floating out there. But Senator Lee talked about, you know, his approach to poverty and how that should be answered, his approach to higher education and how that should be answered. He's also talked about prison reform. And a lot of these things have to do with getting the government out of it, that when it comes to poverty, we should be looking to communities to help, essentially, instead of just handing money out to people. So he has a few concrete ideas, but he's also suggesting that that others come up with some more.
All right. Hey, Utah's other senator, Senator Orrin Hatch, had some concerns with Attorney General Eric Holder lately. What was he worried about?
Specifically marijuana. So Senator Hatch was concerned that since marijuana is now legal to buy up to an ounce a person in Colorado, recreational use, not even just medical use, that Hatch is concerned that, one, you know, there's going to be, you know, people buying in Colorado and bringing it over to Utah. And two, that it would actually promote the idea of using public lands to, you know, grow marijuana. You know, you find some area of the forest that no one's around and you grow marijuana and then sell it. And Hatch's big concern with Eric Holder was saying, why doesn't the Justice Department prosecute this? You know, why are you guys saying it's okay for them to legalize purchase of weed in Colorado? And the Attorney General's response was essentially what the Justice Department has been saying, which is that, you know, if someone buys it in Colorado and then, you know, goes to Utah with it, then that's a federal crime, that they are, you know, crossing interstate lines, that it's still a crime to produce, cultivate marijuana in, you know, public lands. And that, you know, if there's any case of, you know, drug driving or, you know, minors getting their hands on it, then the feds would intercede. We're not sure if, you know, Hatch is necessarily happy with those answers, but at least he addressed the few that he had.
Well, and it's interesting, sort of the new world of pot tourism. I don't know the stats on this, but I wonder about Utahns going over there to engage in this.
You know, we don't know those numbers, and I don't know if we will. But you know, obviously there are those who are going over there. But it is still, you know, it is still a federal crime to transport even, you know, legal weed you buy in Colorado across the state line into Utah.
All right. Well, okay, this is in other news, Thomas. A new poll shows a frontrunner for the Republican nomination for 2016 in New Hampshire. Is that anybody we've heard of?
I believe Utahns know this guy well. His name is Mitt Romney. We might have talked about him before. It's actually very interesting to see a strategy group, Purple Strategies, actually did a poll of New Hampshire Republicans asking them, you know, who would they want to be their nominee in 2016. And 25% of those who were polled said Mitt Romney. That was more than, you know, said Ron Paul or Chris Christie or any of the other people that might be put forward in that situation. It's obviously very clear that Mitt Romney is still on the minds of people there. Everyone knows who he is. When you think Republicans nominee president, you think Mitt Romney. But the former governor of Massachusetts, Mr. Romney, has said multiple times that he is not going to run again, that he's done with that effort in his life. So I don't think we're going to see Romney 3.0 anytime soon.
Two runs was enough, huh? I'm wondering if that poll was influenced at all by the release of this movie, Mitt, that came out here at Sundance.
It could have been. I don't know that how many New Hampshire residents have seen it, but I would also, you know, guess that there are people who say, wow, he's such more human than we thought he was after seeing that that documentary. But that's a couple years away. I don't think that's going to influence Romney's decision to run by any means.
Right. Right. Well, you never know. Sometimes in politics, you never know until the end what's really going to happen.
Nope, you don't. So I guess we'll just have to keep talking about it.
Absolutely. Thomas Burr, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks, Roger.
And that was Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr, author of Political Cornflakes. He joins us weekly for this conversation, and there is a link to Political Cornflakes on our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. Now on The Rundown, we turn to the latest in our monthly series of conversations with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. We'll be discussing air quality, transit, the governor's State of the State address, the Utah State legislative session, and more. Mayor Becker, thanks as always for joining us today.
Always good to be with you. Thank you.
So just this past month, you had some visiting members of the Obama White House here in town, and this had to do with your work with the White House's Climate Change Task Force. So just who was visiting and what were they doing here?
The co-chairs of that task force are David Agnew. He is the head of intergovernmental relations in the White House, so among the close circle of President Obama's advisors and liaisons to state, local, and tribal officials. and Nancy Sutley, who is the chair of the Council on Environmental Quality, CEQ. And CEQ is both responsible for a portion of the federal government, that is implementation of the environmental impact statement process, but she is also the chief environmental advisor to the president. So they are co-chairing the task force and serve as a liaison, obviously, to the White House and to federal departments and agencies, and are also helping guide this effort we're involved in, which focuses on what we're doing around the nation at the state and local and tribal levels to address climate change as it's impacting us today and going forward, and how the federal government can help us do our work in addressing climate change, as well as what they might do to improve the work they're doing in addressing climate change.
So there's a fact-finding aspect or a learning aspect to that visit.
Yeah, and they've started visiting some of their 25 members or so of the task force, and they've started visiting some of the communities and states where there are task force members for them to gain information about what's going on in our communities relative to climate change. So to become more informed and to have kind of roundtable discussions. So they were out here for really a day and a half of just fully focused, devoted time for us, which was a nice opportunity for us. So we spent some of the time kind of introducing them to the city. David Agnew, for example, had never been to Salt Lake before. He's from South Carolina, and I had a great time kind of showing him around and visiting with him, and he spent some time as well with the governor and others. And then on the day, the full day we had devoted to this, we spent the first half of the day giving them a tour of Salt Lake, things we're doing as it relates to climate change, including like a visit to the public safety building here as the first net zero building of its kind in the country. But we also took them up in the canyons in the Wasatch and showed them the Wasatch. That's our watershed. It's being impacted by climate change today. We're addressing those impacts and planning for our future as it relates to the changes that will come over time. It also gave us a very nice opportunity, though, to talk to them about the work we're doing in the central Wasatch with the Wasatch Front and the Wasatch Back on what is going to be the future with transportation, with protection of our resources and our uses up there. So we had a great experience in a roundtable in the afternoon with people from every sector of our community discussing climate change with them.
And that in itself is a big topic. You and I have talked about watersheds and the threats posed to our watersheds by climate change on previous shows. But I'm actually going to turn our attention now away from that and towards air quality. The legislative session is underway right now, and lawmakers have committed to trying to tackle this issue this session. There's the bipartisan Clean Air Task Force. We had the governor during his State of the State address talking about this as a potential major policy push for him. And I guess I'm wondering if you think that between efforts by the governor and by the legislature, if there's momentum to actually deal with this issue.
Well, I think at this point there's certainly a lot of focused attention at the state level on air quality and air pollution. And as many of your listeners are probably aware, I devoted my entire State of the City remarks a couple of weeks ago to air quality, to what we are doing and will do and will continue to try to improve on in the city to do our part. But we're a small part of the airshed. We have to work within the region, both with local governments and the state and our federal partners, to get things done. And so we focused as well beyond just our city boundaries on how we need help so that we can get more done to address our air pollution. And it is on almost every person's lips today, and it has caught the attention of the state. And as you mentioned, the governor in his State of the State talked about two things that he was going to be pursuing. Both of those, anyway, were in my speech as well. So,
right. I was going to say that the governor picked up on some of the things that you mentioned in your State of the City address. One of those was wood burning and the effects of wood burning on our air quality. What was the other one?
Yeah, so it's called Tier 3 fuels, which as our refineries take crude oil and transform those into the fuels we use in our vehicles and other uses, is you can clean those fuels more at the refinery, and you can have vehicles that perform better and thereby reduce our air pollution both from the refineries and from our vehicles. And vehicles are the largest contributor to our air pollutants, the PM2.5 pollutants that we suffer from so much in the winter inversion months. So that is certainly a significant step, and don't want to in any way diminish that. But there are other things, of course, that the state can and should do. And if we focus, for example, on vehicles and vehicles as the primary source of pollution, we've got to make it easier for people not to drive, not only encourage them and provide incentives for them maybe not to drive as much or drive alone, but also to provide good alternatives. And that's where transit comes in. So one of the primary items that I've focused attention on is we've got to get the state to raise the cap on the transit tax, which funds a lot of our transit service, so that UTA can expand that service in a way that makes it more convenient and accessible for people.
So I know that on a recent visit to Washington, D.C., you had some strong words for the legislature when it came to air quality and addressing air quality. What was that about?
So what I have focused attention on, we've spent a lot of time, and I have a fair amount of professional and personal background in looking at air quality and air pollution issues, is we need the state to either take some action, some meaningful action as it relates to addressing our air pollution problem here, and or they need to give us the authority at the local level to address these issues. Mm-hmm. And the state has served in some respects as an impediment to us. And transit is a good example in that we cannot fund transit and expand our transit service unless the legislature gives us the authority at the local government, and in this case, actually the voters the authority, to vote on increasing transit funding. And if that happens, if we can get increased funding, there's no question that the resources are going to go to mostly expanded bus service. How frequently the buses come, how broad the coverage is so it reaches further into the community, what the length of time of service is for trains and buses. So we can do a lot relatively quickly to make it much easier for people to use transit. And, of course, the more cars we get off the road and people use transit, the better our air quality is.
I know that Representative Joel Briscoe has a bill proposed that would do exactly what you're talking about, allow local communities to raise the sales tax and increase transit funding.
He does.
As, the cap on the sales
yeah,
tax.
As does now Representative Johnny Anderson, who is chair of the Transportation Committee in the House. So we're seeing some momentum building. We were anxious to be a part of that and a constructive part to see if we can help move some things forward and for our public to support our legislators in taking action that's needed.
I'm just going to remind our listeners that we are speaking with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. We speak with the mayor once a month to get an update from the city administration. Speaking of transit, I know that the city has had a plan to unveil a discounted transit pass for Salt Lake City residents. How's that proceeding?
Very well. We are launching on March 1st what we are calling the Hive Pass, and every resident in Salt Lake City will be able to get a monthly pass. It has to be for a year period, an annual pass that will be paid for monthly if people want, where they can have basically a 70% reduction in the regular price of a transit pass. And we're hearing very strong feedback from people who want to take advantage of that and coming March 1st. And we'll be putting out a lot of information about how people can gain access to that new service. And I really have to commend Utah Transit Authority. This is a hard thing for them to work into their system, and they've been great to work with. We're on target to launch that, where people can obtain a pass that will allow them to use transit for $30 a month, a vastly reduced rate.
So people could have this paid for through their utilities, but also there are going to be remote locations where you can go and pick up these passes. Is that correct?
Yeah. This is a non-transferable pass. We want this to go to residents of Salt Lake City and be limited to that. So people will need to get a picture ID with the pass so folks know that it is it's for the person intended as a resident of Salt Lake. And they'll be able to pick it up from a number of different sources. As I said, we're going to be putting out a lot of information, but it will include normal city offices, but also libraries and different hours when people can obtain the pass.
You know, we've talked a lot about environment and transit right here, and you know, everything's all linked together. But I thought that we might turn for a second to motions on the Hill this year and whether or not they actually happen, Salt Lake City has a non-discrimination ordinance on the books that prohibits discrimination against members of the LGBT community. You can't be fired. You can't be refused housing, I guess, simply because you're gay. Lawmakers have tried to get this adopted at the state level for several years now, and there's a new bill on the table. Are you optimistic that that will pass?
Well, I certainly the non-discrimination ordinance relating to prohibiting discrimination against someone who's gay or LGBT in the LGBT community on housing and employment has been a great success in Salt Lake City. Almost 20 other local jurisdictions have now picked up that ordinance and that policy. And so we're seeing it expanding really statewide in terms of local government jurisdictions. But there has been, as you noted, there's been a proposal before the state legislature to have a state law that follows the basic tenets of the ordinance we passed at the local level. And it has been, I think, universally by universal, I mean a vast majority of both people and those who are involved with addressing discrimination in our communities have been very supportive across the board. Senator Urquhart from St. George has been sponsoring that bill the last couple of years, including this year. I think we have hopes. Last year he got a hearing on it. Mm-hmm. This year I think he has hopes that it can move, but I think there's a lot of reticence from what I'm hearing up on the Hill about doing anything relating to the LGBT community in the wake of the federal court decision that came down that basically ruled Utah's constitutional provision that prohibited gay couples from marrying or any other recognition of a legal recognition of a commitment among gay couples from going forward. And so it's caught up in some bigger politics right now, even though I think I've seen that the polling suggests that 70%+ of people in this state support that kind of protection for our LGBT members of the community.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the legislature does with that this year. But it's interesting to note that Salt Lake City was the first to pass a non-discrimination policy in the state. You know, I wanted to take the opportunity to ask you, because during your State of the City address, you addressed air quality almost entirely. I wanted to ask what the state of our economy is.
You know, Salt Lake City has been booming. And you would almost never know, based on the economic development activity in the city, that we even had a recession. It was almost unique around the country in the development that continued to go and grow, and it is continuing today, and in ways maybe that were unexpected even a few years ago. The residential population in downtown Salt Lake has been exploding, which we welcome. It helps enormously in creating the kind of vibrancy we want downtown. We've just started construction of a new performing arts center downtown. But then you look outside of downtown in the Sugar House area where the streetcar just went in and opened in December. And it has turned into this vibrant, almost mini downtown, although it almost seems as active as downtown, with all of the new mixed-use development, residential, commercial, retail, restaurants, you name it. It is all happening in Sugar House, and it has become, or returned to maybe, a very exciting mixed-use area in our community that people are thronging to. Got listed as best neighborhood in the country in one source. And so it's exciting to see in Salt Lake City this economic vibrancy and vitality that we all want in our urban area. And when you couple that with the recreational opportunities in our mountains and deserts in the Great Salt Lake, we are really in an enviable position. And I think it's part of what makes my job so enjoyable and satisfying is that we're just seeing this great mix and agglomeration of things happening at one time that's making for such a livable city.
An interesting place. So, Mayor Ralph Becker, last question. Did you go to any Sundance films?
I went to one. I went to the opening of Mitt.
I was there the very next showing. Interesting movie. What did you think?
You know, it was really great to kind of see the very personal side from a family perspective of what it was like for obviously the Romney family to go through the two races for presidency So from that vantage point, I thought it was a really interesting movie, and I think, as people said, it for those who didn't think of Mitt Romney as a very warm or engaging person, it certainly humanized him a lot.
Absolutely. Some critics called it a study in failure. You know, two presidential runs. At times, it was a bit gut-wrenching to watch, I have to admit. That's my own take on it anyway. Yeah. Mayor Ralph Becker, thanks very much for coming in and speaking with us.
Thanks. Today. Great to be with you.
And again, that was Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker. You can find this interview and all of our past programs at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks again for tuning in to The Rundown this afternoon. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Ryan Cunningham, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at @KCPWRundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Utah Business Report and Marketplace are next.